I'm delighted to be here, standing in front of my people. Working in the pro-life movement for about 25 years, I've addressed a lot of different congregations, a lot of different audiences. Most of them are majority Roman Catholic and then evangelical. So it is such an incredibly encouraging delight for me to actually stand before you guys. I want to talk about something that's really confusing, and you hear different conflicting reports. Is there an association between abortion and breast cancer, or isn't there? If you listen to the National Cancer Association, no, there's no association. But what's really the truth about this? Let's back up before we focus in on abortion and breast cancer and look at just any procedure, okay? What are the risks of any surgery? Well, the risks of any surgery are the risks of hemorrhage, infection, surgical complications, failure of the procedure, which can be incomplete abortion or ongoing pregnancy, and death. Those are actually the risks of any surgical procedure. And abortion is no different. But what about the long-term risks? What do we know about what happens to women way after they make the choice? Well, we know three things that are very well established in the medical literature. One of them is there's an association between abortion and preterm birth and subsequent pregnancies. There's 145 studies now over four decades which have shown that association. We know that there's an increase in adverse psychological outcomes like suicide, depression, and substance abuse. And when I tell audiences that, I see all the women in the audience saying, yep, we've seen it. But how many people know about premenopausal breast cancer? And that's what we're here to talk about today. It's not all abortions, and it's not all breast cancer, but it is the women who abort their first or more pregnancies before they bring a pregnancy to term. Why would that be? If you look at how a woman's breast changes from never pregnant to being able to make milk, there are a tremendous amount of cellular changes that happen. And what happens is women's breast tissue that's never made milk is composed primarily of type 1 and type 2 lobules, which are pink and blue here, okay, for the sake of you looking at it. This is the condition of the woman's breast after puberty, but before she's ever pregnant. She has a few type 1 and 2 lobules, and that's the way they are. At the end of the first trimester, that is at the end of about the first 12 weeks of pregnancy, she's got much more breast tissue, and that's where the breast tenderness comes from. It's because the reason women's breast gets tender is because the breast tissue is multiplying really fast. So at the end of the first trimester, she has a lot more breast tissue, but lo and behold, it's type 1 and 2. It's just the blue and pink. It has not matured to the type 3 and type 4 lobules. At the end of the third trimester, actually after 32 weeks, is when you see a predominance of the breast tissue becoming type 3 and type 4 lobules. And then those type 4 lobules are the kind that make milk, okay, they lactate. Type 1 and 2 lobules are where 99% of breast cancers arise from. Type 4 lobules, the lactating lobules, and then the lactating lobules regress after weaning. You see it's mostly green. After weaning, the type 3 and type 4 lobules are resistant to breast cancer. Almost no breast cancer arises from that kind of breast tissue. So what does this mean? Well, female babies are born with this type 1 tissue. At puberty, the young girl's breasts grow, as we said, but the tissue produced is type 1 and 2. And it's vulnerable to cancer, as we talked about. Okay. When a woman becomes pregnant for the first time, the estrogen produced by her body changes the type 1 and 2 into type 3 and 4. So it's a change in the breast that happens because of a hormone called estrogen. All right. And it's estrogen that causes rapid growth, but it isn't until the end and after 32 weeks that that tissue actually matures to become resistant to cancer. If a woman miscarries in the first trimester, okay, that first time when the breast tenderness is happening, if she miscarries then, frequently the baby and the placenta have not developed far enough for her to actually get a stimulation of much breast tissue. Many women who have miscarried very early will say, I never really felt pregnant. And that's because of the thousands of things that have to happen when the sperm and egg come together, one or two of them didn't happen. And so the placenta and the baby don't develop very far. The baby dies real early. And if the placenta hasn't developed very far, then there isn't much estrogen around to cause the stimulation. So when you look at women that miscarry in the first trimester, they do not show an association in increased risk of breast cancer. But if the baby continues to develop through the first 20 weeks, you get stimulation of the breast by the pregnancy hormone estrogen. And estrogen is made from the woman's ovary, but also estrogens are made from the placenta as well. So you've got a double source of estrogen. Okay. So remember, the key point is that type 1 and 2 lobules, they're immature, they can't make milk, and they're susceptible to cancer if they're exposed to the environmental carcinogens over a long period of time. Around week 20, there are changes that take place in the placenta that send out more hormones like progesterone, which cause the breast to start to change and mature to make milk. By week 32, so that the changes, the maturing starts at 20, by week 32, about half of the breast, or a little more than half, has now converted to type 3 and 4 lobules. So reaching at least 32 weeks begins to protect a woman's breasts from cancer. By week 40, 70 to 90% of type 1 and 2 lobules have been converted to type 4 lobules. Type 4 lobules are the kind that make milk. I realize these are lots of types, but basically remember, the lower numbers are immature and susceptible. When you get to 4, which is the milk producing, or 4 regresses to 3, then those are resistant to cancer. And breast tissue, which has been made capable of making milk, very rarely makes cancer. Now, an additional protection happens if the woman breastfeeds. So after the first term pregnancy, if she breastfeeds, a woman's breasts are protected from cancer compared to a woman who has never had a term pregnancy. Loss of pregnancies after the first term pregnancy do not increase a woman's risk as much as losses before the first term pregnancy. And the reason now becomes really obvious. If the woman has gone through a term pregnancy, most of her breast tissue is actually matured. Okay, it's beyond the risk. But if she loses before the breast tissue has been matured, she's got a large amount of breast tissue there that is susceptible and arrested in a susceptible state. The longer a woman's breast is composed mostly of type 1 and 2 lobules, the higher the woman's risk of breast cancer. So you can see that the lowest risk women are the ones who have their first term pregnancy around age 20, they breastfeed, and each subsequent pregnancy brought to term reduces the risk of breast cancer by 10%. Increased risk, what does that woman look like? She has her first term pregnancy after age 30. She has second trimester miscarriages, preterm birth, or induced abortion before 32 weeks. First trimester induced abortions do increase the risk, but first trimester miscarriages do not increase the risk. Okay, let me pause and say that again, because that's something that the women need to hear. First trimester miscarriages do not increase the risk. First trimester abortions do. Why? Because the first trimester abortion is aborting a healthy pregnancy, and the placenta has had the opportunity to make lots of estrogen, so she experiences that increase in breast tissue. First trimester miscarriages typically happen very, very early, and the women don't experience the same level of estrogen increase, and that's why they do not increase the risk of breast cancer. But let me pause and talk about second trimester miscarriages. This association between abortion and breast cancer is not just abortion. If a woman is in a car accident in the second trimester and she loses a baby then before 32 weeks, she is at increased risk. If she loses it for some other reason, infection, she is at increased risk. So it's not just the fact of abortion, it's the fact that she's gone so far in pregnancy but hasn't had the opportunity to mature her breast tissue. The last and controversial thing, but it's actually well established in the literature, is that exposure to the oral contraceptive pill, which is an estrogen, causes the same kind of stimulation that early pregnancy causes. Women often feel breast tenderness on the pill, and that's because their breast type 1 and 2 tissues are reproducing and they never bring it to maturity. So it turns out that women who have taken the pill more than 5 years are at increased risk of breast cancer. And the highest risk are the teens who have been on the birth control pill for more than 5 years. So teens on the birth control pill is really not a good idea. And I'm not against the birth control pill, but you have to understand there are times and places for medications, and the birth control pill, one of the things we know about it is that the estrogen increases your risk of breast cancer. Abortion is associated with an increased risk of breast cancer. We've got 18 out of 72 studies since 1957 that show a positive and statistically significant association between abortion and breast cancer. 7 show a positive and marginally significant association, and 2 show a very strong association. There's actually, I think, 4 now. What about the argument that abortion is not associated with an increased risk of breast cancer? Well, the remainder of the studies do not detect an association between abortion and breast cancer, or the association is not statistically significant. So if you're the National Cancer Institute, what you do is you take all the studies in the world and you eliminate all the studies that show an association and you use the ones that don't. It's very simple. And that's the way science at the political level works. Why don't all the studies show an association? Well, there's some really interesting things when you dig into the literature of breast cancer. What you find is that the methods of doing this study are actually scientifically flawed. One of those flaws is incomplete questionnaires. In one study, over half of the respondents did not complete the section on abortion history. They left it blank. So the question is, did you have an abortion? Yes, no. They left it blank, so the authors assumed that all the blanks were no. Okay. Many studies excluded, and this is actually incredible. This exclusion could not happen by accident, because nobody in their right mind would exclude this by accident. But many studies excluded women who had early breast cancer, because they said, well, in situ cancer doesn't count. We'll only take the ones who have progressed beyond in situ cancer. But it's ridiculous, because in situ cancer is the first stage of cancer. So why would you exclude all the women with early cancer? They also excluded women who who had a history of breast cancer, but were currently breast cancer-free. So if you exclude all the women with breast cancer, then you find that there isn't an association between abortion and breast cancer. Some of the studies had a wrong time frame. So from the time that you have the abortion till the time that you develop breast cancer, it takes a while. It takes 8 to 10 years. So for a breast cancer cell to grow big enough to become clinically detectable, we know it's about 8 to 10 years. And many of the studies followed women for about 5. Well, if you study women for 5 years, you're not going to catch the ones that develop it 8 to 10 years later. And many of the studies did the wrong pregnancy sequence. Abortion of a pregnancy after the first term pregnancy does not have the same effect, since 70 to 90% of the breast tissue has already matured into type 4 lobules. And I'll give you an example of this study. There was a study from China, the Huang study. No, it was a different study. The study from China, which was a big study of lots of women who had lots of abortions. The problem is, in China, the abortions are after the pregnancy, after the first baby, not before the first baby. So that study didn't show an association, although subsequently there have actually been a really good study from China which shows a big association. So it depends on the pregnancy sequence. So when you're confronted with there's no association between abortion and breast cancer, first response is, tell me what studies you're looking at. And then go with them and say, okay, let's look at how they did this study. Did they look at the right population? Were they looking at women who had already had pregnancies? So you have to kind of dig into the details to understand why some people can say, oh, there's lots of studies that don't show an association. Also, sometimes they have the wrong comparison group. The appropriate comparison group is women who are pregnant and have one of two choices, abortion, birth. But often the comparison group taken is women who are never pregnant. Now, the whole reason that we know that there's an association between what happens in the first pregnancy or pregnancies and breast cancer is because 50 years ago, researchers observed that nuns had a high risk of breast cancer. That's because they weren't pregnant. Okay? So women who never give birth are, by definition, in a higher risk group. Why? Because they have type 1 and 2 lobules that have never matured to type 4 lobules. It's really simple. It all comes right back down to the type 1 and 2 lobules. How much do you have and how long do you have it? Also, sometimes they use the wrong definition of abortion. Now, this is something that in the pro-life movement you will see a lot. This word abortion actually has 20 different definitions. There's spontaneous abortion. There's induced abortion. There's abortion or loss of a fetus before 20 weeks. There's a whole slew of definitions. So they will take women who have had spontaneous abortions, mix them in with the population of women who've had induced abortions, and of course the association washes out because first trimester miscarriages do not increase your risk. So if you've had 20 women with first trimester miscarriages and 3 women in there have had abortions and you mix them all together, you get 23 women, you're not going to see an association. So you have to look at the population group being studied and how they define that population group. There's a lot of shenanigans going on. Okay, so I'm going to just talk just real briefly about some research papers. This was a foundational paper. Janet Dolling, 1994, her sister had breast cancer. She's a National Cancer Institute researcher. Very well published. She published this paper, Risk of Breast Cancer Among Young Women and the Relationship to Induced Abortion. She was curious about the connection. She studied 845 women with breast cancer identified through the tumor registry of the National Cancer Institute. She worked for the National Cancer Institute. This is not a pro-life researcher. This is an NCI researcher. She matched them with 961 matched controls. That means match for age and race and other reproductive factors. And these are women that didn't have breast cancer. So this is what's called a case control study. This is what she found. The highest risks were observed when the abortion was done at ages younger than 18, particularly if it took place after 8 weeks gestation or at 30 years of age or older. Among women who had been pregnant at least once, the risk of breast cancer in those who had experienced an induced abortion was 50% higher than among other women by age 45. Teenagers under age 18 and women over 29 years of age who procured an abortion increased their breast cancer risk by more than 100% by age 45. Teenagers with a family history of breast cancer who procure an abortion face a risk of breast cancer that was incalculably high. That means it was infinity risk. All 12 women in the study with this history were diagnosed with breast cancer by the age of 45. Okay. That's a really powerful study. She received an incredible amount of pressure, so much so that she said, I will never publish on this topic again. Okay. However, she has published on it again, just in very kind of sideways ways, which you'll see. All right, here's another fundamentally important study. This was Innocent Byers in 2004. It's called First Pregnancy Characteristics and Subsequent Risk of Breast Cancer Among Young Women. Now, this was a great study because it was done with a New York registry. It turns out that in New York, which a state in which abortion was legal before Roe versus Wade, part of the legalization was a requirement that women who had abortions, well, babies who died from abortion, had to have a certificate of fetal death filed. So they have a fetal death registry, only state in the country I know of that has. Okay. However, they don't let anybody look at the fetal death registry unless they give special permission, which they did in this study. So they have this fetal death registry, and then they match that with the breast cancer registry. This is a really powerful kind of a study because there isn't an issue of, did the woman forget she had an abortion, or did she not report it to the interviewer? This is medical record studies, and medical record studies are pretty solid. So they took and they looked at and matched the fetal death registries with the breast cancer registry. And this is what they found. 2,522 women with breast cancer compared to 10,000 women without breast cancer. And the author said, pregnancy, and especially first pregnancy, appears to represent a critical window in determining future breast cancer risk. The occurrence of a first completed pregnancy and the age at first pregnancy are among the strongest known risk predictors of breast cancer risk. That's actually widely accepted throughout the medical profession. A significant elevation of risk was associated with a history of induced abortion, but not spontaneous abortion. And then he's reviewing a few other researchers with similar data. Melby is one of those researchers. Melby found an increased risk of breast cancer risk. Let me try that again. Melby found an increased risk in breast cancer among women who had delivered before 32 weeks gestation, similar in magnitude to that observed in our study. So their study was consistent with another big study. Unfortunately, Melby kind of hid some of that information in the paper. You have to really dig it out. And then Innes goes on to explain why this is true. Mammary cells are thought to proliferate during the first and second trimester of pregnancy, that is, type 1 and 2 grow, and to differentiate, that is, turn into 3 and 4 lobules, mostly type 4 lobules, to differentiate in the third trimester. Extreme prematurity has been characterized by high maternal estrogen levels, which could increase breast cell proliferation. Of course, estrogen causes breast tissue to grow. Increased breast hyperplasia, that is, the growth of breast tissue, followed by termination of pregnancy before full differentiation, that is, before the breast tissue has developed type 4 lobules, full differentiation of mammary stem cells may increase the breast susceptibility to neoplasia. This is 10 years ago. We've known this for a long time. Here was a really interesting study done in Britain. Patrick Carroll published Breast Cancer Epidemic Modeling and Forecasts Based on Breast Cancer, or Based on Abortion and Other Risk Factors. So what he did was he looked at women in the National Health Service who had had abortions. Again, this is registry based. And he took those women and plotted the curve, which is the bottom here, the red part. Let me just see if I think I've got a bigger slide. Okay, so on the bottom, what you see is number of abortions, okay? And the green line is he took breast cancer incidence 10 years later, and he took that breast cancer incidence and he moved it down 10 years, and he said, do these two correlate? Because if there was really an association, you would expect that 10 years after the abortion incidence increased, that you would see a statistically significant increase in breast cancer. And lo and behold, that's what you see. I mean, the correlation coefficient, that is, how well does the green dotted line match with the red? The correlation coefficient is 0.98, which is, that means it's a really close correlation. That means that you could almost draw a line here and say, what is the increased risk of breast cancer, the increased incidence of breast cancer based on the increase from induced abortion? And you see that that's the difference. It's significant. It's really significant. That's in England. All right, more recent studies. Dolly, Cancer Epidemiology, it's a good journal. University of Washington and the National Cancer Institute. They looked at 897 women with breast cancer compared to 1,569 women without breast cancer. I'm going to pause here a second. I don't know if you can see it, but the authors are Dolly and Janet Dolling. Okay, so she did publish again on this, but she's not the first author, and then a bunch of others. Specifically, older age, family history of breast cancer, earlier menarche age. Now, why would earlier onset of periods be associated with increased breast cancer risk? Because your breasts tissue starts growing in puberty, and the longer you have type 1 and 2 lobules before you bring it to a term pregnancy, the greater your risk. So early menarche, induced abortion, and oral contraceptive use were associated with an increased risk of breast cancer. So this is 2009, National Cancer Institute. Oops. The risk of breast cancer was 40% higher in women who had an induced abortion as compared with women who did not. Oral contraceptive use, greater than or equal to 1 year, was associated with a modest increased risk for breast cancer. And among oral contraceptive users only, earlier age at first use further elevated the risk. So what they're saying is to expose the breast to estrogen early in a woman's reproductive life causes that proliferation of breast tissue, and it all comes back to the same thing. How early and how long the exposure is when you have type 1 and 2 lobules, and how early did you develop the type 1 and 2 lobules. So all of these risk factors can be combined into that key concept. This was a very interesting study from France. It was actually the French equivalent of the National Cancer Institute. And they said, our results confirm the existence of a protective effect of an increasing number of full-term pregnancies toward breast cancer among BRCA1 and BRCA2 carriers. Okay, let me break that down. What they're saying is, if a BRCA carrier, if a breast cancer gene carrier has their babies early and brings them to term and breastfeeds, they're protected versus BRCA carriers who don't bring their pregnancies to term. Additionally, the hazard ratio shows an association between incomplete pregnancies and a higher breast cancer risk. Well, what's an incomplete pregnancy? An incomplete pregnancy is one that doesn't result in a live birth, okay, or one that's born before 32 weeks. That's an incomplete pregnancy, which reached 239. That means, what does 2.39? Okay, that means a 239% increased risk, okay, among women who had at least 3 incomplete pregnancies compared to women with 0 incomplete pregnancies. So what you tease out from the data is that actually even 1 incomplete pregnancy increases their risk. But they used 3. Okay. But these are not pro-life researchers, guys. This is the French National Cancer Institute. I've shown you also 2 National Cancer Institutes in the United States studies. So it's something that the researchers know, but it is so politically incorrect to say that they won't say it. All right, this is the Le Carpentier study also. This increased risk appeared to be restricted to incomplete pregnancies occurring before the first full-term pregnancy. So now you guys know how to read the medical literature in this. Okay, so what is the take-home message from this? Aborting a first pregnancy, especially for teens or women over 30, increases the risk of breast cancer. Spontaneous abortions in the first trimester do not increase breast cancer risk. And the more abortions before the first term pregnancy, the higher the risk. So when you hear, and I hear this over and over again as an argument, well, it's better for her to abort than to bring to term because she has it's safer for women to abort than to bear children. And the fact is, it isn't. And the only way that people can get away with repeating that mantra over and over again is that they're not looking not only at the short-term effects, but at the long-term effects. And the long-term effects are profound. And we've talked about premenopausal breast cancer, but suicide, in one study, women who aborted versus women who gave birth, women who aborted had committed suicide 7 times higher rate of suicide. Preterm birth, like I said, 145 studies in the medical literature, 30% increased risk with 1 abortion, 80% increased risk with 2 abortions, and over 100% increased risk with 3. Preterm birth, preemies, it sounds cute, right? These are the 22 to 26 week deliveries, the ones that are at the edge of life and spend months in the ICU. So when we talk about abortion and its effect on women, we have to really step back and not only just look at how many women were recorded to have died after this incident and the lack of abortion reporting requirements in the United States is a whole nother hour lecture. But we have to look at also what happens to their life afterward and in the long term. there is a better choice for women. That's what I had to present, and I'd be glad to take any questions if you have any. That I can't tell you, but I can tell you where to find the answer. There's a really good website called the Breast Cancer Prevention Institute. Angela Lanfranchi runs that. She's a general surgeon who's devoted her life to breast cancer and speaks about it all the time. So she would have that kind of a breakdown, but I don't.
If a woman miscarries in the second trimester, or for that matter has an abortion, but then has another pregnancy and carries that to term, does that undo some of the increased risk for breast cancer because some of the cells develop into the more mature cells?
Yep, absolutely, you got it. So it's not just the fact that they have an abortion, but really the risk increases the longer the duration before they bring a pregnancy to term. So a woman who aborts, gets pregnant immediately, brings that baby to term, she's going to have a lower risk than someone who aborts and waits 30 years before they have a term pregnancy. That's exactly right. Or miscarries in the second trimester. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
What about people who
don't miscarry,
couldn't have children?
Yeah. What about women who can't have children or who don't have children for some reason or other? They are at increased risk of breast cancer. And that's, again, that's how we actually discovered this link, boy, over 40 years ago, 50 years ago, was that nuns were found to have an increased risk of breast cancer for some reason, and the reason is because they never got pregnant. Now, they don't have as high a risk as somebody who aborted because it's totally dependent on the amount of breast tissue. So women who have never been pregnant have a lesser amount of breast tissue than women who have been pregnant because the breast tissue's never proliferated from that estrogen stimulation, with the exception of women who have been on the birth control pill and then never got pregnant. They do have the increased risk because they have had estrogen stimulation to stimulate their breast.
What about those who have the abortion really early before the breast tissue starts to develop a little bit more? Do they not have as high risk as the breast tissue?
That is correct. Women who have the abortion very, very early don't have as high a risk. They don't, because they don't have the same amount of stimulation. So the highest risk is second trimester losses, because they've got huge amount of stimulation for a long period of time and no maturity. So the very, very early abortions don't have as much risk. Now, in saying all that, we're using for early abortion, about a third of early abortions right now are with an antiprogesterone called RU486 or mifepristone. RU486 blocks progesterone all over a woman's body. So it not only blocks progesterone in the placenta, but it blocks progesterone in the breast, in the brain, in the liver, and in the immune system. Nobody knows what that's going to do to breast cancer. Nobody knows. So basically, American women are guinea pigs for this drug. And it's really a shame. Yeah, go ahead.
For the birth control, is it progestin only as well as combined estrogen and progesterone?
It's mostly estrogen-containing birth control. We don't, I haven't seen, and again, that I'm going to ask Angela Lanfranchi about the progesterone only, but as far as I recall from her work, it's only the estrogen-containing component, because progesterone doesn't cause a lot of proliferation. It's estrogen that causes the growth. Estrogen promotes growth of cells. Okay, and progesterone changes those cells into something else, but estrogen promotes the growth. So it's mostly estrogen-containing birth control pills.
Thank you for your presentation. It's really careful and very carefully nuanced, and I appreciate that deeply.
Thank you.
I'm a layman when it comes to these matters.
Yeah.
Do you have a summary website that we can look at?
I didn't plant this question, but thank you very much because I forgot. Okay. Okay. Outside, hot off the press, we developed these in December, are a set of informational brochures that we developed for doctors to give to their patients. Okay. The first one is information, of course, about American Association of Pro-Life OB-GYNs, why we exist, and why you as a doctor should join. So when you take this, hand it to your OB-GYN, okay? The blue one goes to the OB-GYN. The purple one is for you to read and understand why it's important that you have a pro-life doctor who will not kill you or your baby. The yellow one is abortion and breast cancer, and it explains what I explained in real simple terms. These would actually be really helpful, I think, especially for the pastor's wives to have around or to put in the bathroom. You know, these explain in real simple terms this whole lecture. The next one is abortion and preterm birth. Okay, that's the pink one. And then the green one is abortion and mental health, abortion and suicide, abortion and depression, abortion and alcohol abuse, because that's how people self-medicate their grief. Okay. So these packets, I underestimated the number of people going to be here. We only brought 100. So if you would just take, you know, one per, you know, husband-wife couple, they're free. I mean, these are free, but we actually contracted with a graphic designer to produce these brochures, so he holds the copyright. So you would order through what's called Kinetic Media, and there's order forms there if you want them for your church. But I think they're well designed, and Josh helped tremendously with the design. Thank you, Josh. And those are available out at the table out there, so thank you for asking that question. I forgot to mention it. Yeah.
Did you say that with each subsequent pregnancy and or breastfeeding, the protection increases?
Yep.
More so.
10%.
10% each time.
10% decrease risk.
Decrease risk.
Each pregnancy. So the more babies, the more breastfeeding, the better. That's politically incorrect. Oh my goodness.
Does it matter how long you breastfeed? Like, does it help if you breastfeed for a full year or?
You know, I think the cutoff duration was 4 months, but I haven't reviewed that number in a long time. So that should be on the Breast Cancer Prevention Institute website, that number, but I just can't remember the number.
Quick question. So if you have a full-term pregnancy and then, like, someone would use birth control after that fact, is it the same thing you've been talking about with everything else? By having that full-term pregnancy and breastfeeding or whatever, you've decreased your risk?
Yep. Okay. Yep, that's correct. And that's why when you do the studies, the high-risk population that falls out is the teens who've had the exposure for more than 5 years and then, you know, delay before their first.
Is there a correlation with America having more breast cancer cases because we wait so long to have children compared to other more third world countries?
And again, I think you'd find papers for that on the Breast Cancer Prevention Institute website, but there is a distinct correlation. What we know is that that the West has a high rate of breast cancer. I think it's 1 out of 12 in the West, okay? We know that traditional African countries and traditional Asian countries had a fairly low rate of breast cancer. But when that population group emigrates to the United States, after 2 generations, their breast cancer risk is the same. So something happens, and what happens is they join the culture, okay? So it's a cultural problem. This is really a cultural problem. It's a problem that I think we as the church need to really think about, because we could do a better job honoring women who do their primary God-given, fulfill their primary God-given vocation as a wife and family and stay home and take care of their kids. I mean, that's a wonderful thing. But instead, I've had so many patients in my office who come in, they're in their mid-30s, they've been professional women, they've gone through it, and I'd say, well, you know, there's a certain season of a woman's life for reproducing. Yeah, I get that, Dr. Harrison. And, you know, as soon as I get this next job, then I'll get my house and I'll be able to start having kids. And I said, how old are you? Well, I'm 35. Well, how long will it take you to do that? Well, probably 40. So I'll start about 42. And I say, hello, your chances of ever getting pregnant at 42 are almost zero. first-time pregnancy. Okay. Your chances of getting pregnant at 20 are the same as they are at 35. Okay. It's basically 85% of couples, 15% of couples are infertile, 85% will be fertile. But from 35 to 40, your chances go from 10% per cycle to 1% per cycle. So only about 5 to 10% of women at age 40, at age 40, about 5% of women are going to get pregnant. And at age 42, it goes down. It's a curve that falls off. We have a season. Women are seasonal creatures. We're cyclic. We have a time for this and a time for that, and the 40s is not the time when you start having kids, by and large. So it's a reality that our culture denies, and you know, we push our girls to go to college and get your first, I've been there, my heart goes out, I really relate to this. But is that really, what does that do to us as women? Okay, so I think it's time for us to kind of rethink this whole push, college, higher education, delay family forever and ever. Because I don't think we're doing ourselves as women any favors. I think we need to make work and professions more family friendly, which with the internet they could be if we had the will and if we valued pregnancy and childbearing and having a family enough. I think we could change things to make it possible for women to exercise their brain and feed the kids at the same time. I mean, yeah, I'll say from personal experience, you may have to start your work at 10 o'clock and ended at 2 in the morning, but you know, it's still possible to do. So I think it's worth talking about. We need to talk.